Greetings, and welcome to the Easterly Government Properties second quarter 2018 earnings call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. A question-and-answer session will follow the formal presentation. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to your host, Ms. Megan Bevere, Executive Vice President, CFO, and COO for Easterly Government Property. Thank you. You may begin.
Good morning. Before the call begins, please note the use of forward-looking statements by the company on this conference call. Statements made on this call may include statements which are not historical facts and are considered forward-looking. The company intends these forward-looking statements to be covered by the safe harbor provisions for forward-looking statements contained in the Private Securities Litigation Act Reform of 1995 and is making this statement for the purpose of complying with those safe harbor provisions. Although the company believes that its plans, intentions, expectations, strategies, and prospects as reflected in or suggested by those forward-looking statements are reasonable, it can give no assurance that these plans, intentions, expectations, or strategies will be attained or achieved. Furthermore, actual results may differ materially from those described in the forward-looking statements and will be affected by a variety of risks and factors that are beyond the company's control, including, without limitation, those contained in Item 1A, Risk Factors, of its annual report on Form 10-K for the year ended December 31, 2017, filed with the SEC on March 1, 2018, and in its other SEC filings. The company assumes no obligations to update publicly any forward-looking statements, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise. Additionally, on this conference call, the company may refer to certain non-GAAP financial measures, such as funds from operations and cash available for distribution. You can find a tabular reconciliation of these non-GAAP financial measures to the most comparable current GAAP numbers in the company's earnings release and separate supplemental information package on the investor relations page of the company's website at ir.easterlyreit.com. I would now like to turn the conference call over to Darrell Crait, Chairman of Easterly Government Property.
Thank you, Megan. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us for the second quarter conference call. Today, in addition to Megan, I'm also joined by Bill Trimble, the company's CEO. Easterly remains the only internally managed public REIT narrowly focused on the acquisition, development, and servicing of mission-critical real estate leased to the United States federal government. Our mission has remained consistent since IPO, to provide strong risk-adjusted returns through a reliable and growing cash dividend backed by the full faith and credit of the U.S. government. To that end, our effort in the short, medium, and long terms are all centered around this stated goal. In the short term, we're pleased our team is renewing existing assets and lengthening the overall remaining lease term of the company's portfolio. Adherence to the bullseye strategy has proven itself wise in our ability to achieve strong lease renewal spreads and extend the duration of our cash flows, which support our cash available for distribution. In the medium term, we work to cultivate a robust pipeline of new assets with the goal of accretively scaling and diversifying our portfolio, enhancing the stability and growth of our dividend. I commend the acquisition and development team on their success to date in consistently growing the portfolio through the acquisition and development of mission-critical assets backed with a full faith and credit of the U.S. government. Finally, in the long term, I congratulate the management team on creating strong capital partners in both the debt and equity markets, which we hope will continue for many years to come. This partnership has allowed us to achieve a highly competitive cost of capital in both debt and equity, which in turn allows us to continue to deploy capital accretively and support the next chapter of our growth, enabling us to grow a dividend for years to come. Easterly has always been an external growth story driven by acquisitions and development. For that reason, this has been an important quarter for Easterly. With announced acquisition volume, including one of the largest portfolios in our target market, we have propelled the company forward in a meaningful way. We have grown our public float by 34% through the completion of a successful follow-on offering. The increased liquidity from the offering puts the company in a position of strength and allows for enough dry powder to execute on future acquisitions and remain flexible in the market. The balance sheet is in a position where we can deploy capital accretively, allowing for future growth that remains consistent and true to the fundamentals that were instilled at the time of the IPO. We believe meaningful growth that can be achieved in this manner is a success, and one we consistently strive to build upon quarter after quarter and year after year. To be clear, our priority as a management team is to deliver a trusted and growing dividend to our investors, which is backed by the full faith and credit of the U.S. government. We're very pleased that all of our efforts and outcomes are delivering on this goal. With that, I'll turn the call over to Bill to discuss the specifics of the quarter and to give an update on the projects we're engaged in to build shareholder value.
Thanks, Daryl, and good morning. Thank you for joining us for our second quarter earnings call. As Daryl mentioned, the second quarter of 2018 marked a meaningful point in the company's trajectory. We announced the pending acquisition of a $430 million 14-property portfolio of high-quality assets that closely mirror the profile of our existing portfolio. To review, this portfolio of 14 assets equates to approximately 1.5 million square feet of rentable space. 99% of the 14-property portfolio is leased with a weighted average lease expiration year of 2022. The portfolio is still relatively young, with a weighted average age of just 16 years. Of the 14 properties, 79% of the assets were build-to-suit construction, meaning the design and functionality of the building was constructed to meet the specific needs of the underlying tenants. Further, these 14 assets significantly scale the portfolio in an accretive manner and increase Easterly's already strong relationship with the U.S. federal government. With this portfolio, Easterly will now meet the leased real estate needs of 31 different U.S. government tenants. This portfolio acquisition is one we have been watching and anticipating since prior to IPO. Simply put, we feel no other potential buyer understands the makeup of this portfolio better than us. For years, we have underwritten each asset and monitored the mission in each facility to mitigate against potential obsolescence. We knew this portfolio was focused in a similar manner to our existing portfolio, which allows for seamless integration and growth. We're extremely excited to welcome these 14 properties into our growing portfolio and look forward to doing so throughout the remainder of 2018. Our ability to win this portfolio acquisition in a public bidding process highlights many of Easterly's strengths that distinguish us from other potential bidders. First, we understand this very niche market of federally leased real estate. We can underwrite each asset appropriately, thus enabling us to be very fair buyers in the process. Second, our cost of capital is cheaper than other bidders. Because of this, we were able to purchase this large accretive deal at an attractive cap rate. Finally, we are flexible and dependable buyers. You've heard me mention in the past that there are plenty of reasons that a seller would want to delay a closing. Because of our flexibility and our buyers are all attributes that help this deal ultimately come to fruition, and these are company strengths in which we take great pride. In conjunction with the announcement of this 14-property portfolio acquisition, we also successfully executed a public equity capital offering, raising $398.5 million of gross proceeds through an overnight equity offering. This offering further strengthened relationships with existing shareholders and allowed for the initiation of relationships with new equity partners. The deal was extremely well received in the markets, and we are grateful for investors' confidence in our ability to deploy the capital and drive strong returns for our shareholders. Furthermore, this was also a wonderful opportunity for us to lower our leverage and position the company to be able to execute on acquisition and development opportunities that may present themselves in the future. Turning to the acquisition pipeline, Easterly continues to evaluate opportunities and pursue our pipeline of actionable deals. Our position in the market continues to strengthen, but we will still see ample opportunity to grow in this highly fractured market. While the second quarter brought large-scale acquisition growth, we will not stop seeking to acquire new accretive properties. Turning to development, I am pleased to report we are making meaningful progress at all three of our development sites. I had the opportunity to observe firsthand the progress being made at the FEMA Tracy and FDA Alameda sites just 2 weeks ago, and I was very happy to see these projects well underway. Both projects look good, with FEMA Tracy expected to deliver at the end of the third quarter of 2018, and FDA Alameda expected to deliver in the third quarter of 2019. As a reminder, these non-speculative development projects provide for great opportunities to see increased yields on brand new facilities with long-term lease expirations. Under the current timeline, we should expect to see all three developments, including FDA Lenexa, generating cash flows by mid-2020. And from a future development pipeline perspective, I think we can expect to see future opportunities from both FDA and FEMA, given the length and importance of these enduring missions. Turning to lease renewals, allow me to provide a comprehensive overview of all 2017 and 2018 lease renewals thus far, and to speak to upcoming near-term lease expirations for the pending 14-property portfolio acquisition. The 2018 renewals have been a blend of highly specialized, bullseye properties like DEA Riverside, and mission-critical but nevertheless more plain vanilla office space like IRS Fresno. You've heard me say in the past that when there's a bullseye property, the lease renewal conversation centers around replacement costs. Conversely, when you have a more plain vanilla office space expiring, the lease renewal conversation is more focused on what is considered market rent in that region. Just to be clear, less than 15% of our properties would be considered plain vanilla. With that, I am pleased to announce the lease renewal of IRS Fresno for a new 15-year term. Given this is not a gun-toting agency and the space, while absolutely mission-critical, is more generic in nature, when we focused on renewal, we felt lease term was more important priority to give us flexibility to harvest value and provide enduring, stable cash flows for our investors. We're pleased to announce that this lease has been extended to 2033, a 15-year term. While the government's exact amount of TIs are to be determined, we believe that our rent at IRS Fresno will be flat to down 5%. Renewal at this lease length for a reasonable market rent is a success. We are very excited to continue to provide the necessary housing for such an important mission to the United States, and we look forward to remaining a partner to the IRS for many years to come. Five other properties with expirations last year, and this renewed at an average rental increase in the mid to high teens. These include SSA San Diego, DEA San Diego, DEA Riverside, DEA North Highlands, and CBP Chula Vista. In addition to this very healthy renewal spreads, we were able to achieve valuable longer-term leases. Each have been renewed for 10 and 15-year terms, thus meaningfully extending our weighted average remaining lease term and allowing us to maintain 100% occupancy with 99% of our lease income derived from the full faith and credit of the U.S. government. Now that Easterly has seen more lease rolls and started to establish a lease renewal history, you will notice our bullseye properties are consistently renewing at meaningfully higher rental rates increase, providing for modest internal growth of distributable cash flow. Now, with respect to the short-term lease renewals for the pending 14-property portfolio acquisition, I would like to reiterate just how comfortable we are with this portfolio. When bidding, the team underwrote each of these properties appropriately with a very strong understanding of the strength of their tenancies. In the coming years, as we focus on the portfolio's renewals, we will work to continue driving value through extending lease terms and growing our portfolio of U.S. government cash flows. In closing, before turning the call over to Megan, let me step back and commend the Easterly team for the success of this first half of 2018. In the past 6 months, we have either purchased or put under contract approximately $515 million of mission-critical assets leased to the U.S. federal government. We have renewed our second-largest lease for another 15-year term. We successfully launched a public equity offering that put us in wonderful shape for future growth. And finally, we have enhanced our balance sheet by amending our credit facility to provide greater borrowing capacity and more favorable interest rates. For Easterly, the efficiencies have never been better, and the opportunities have never been stronger. With that, I will turn the call over to Megan to discuss the company's quarterly results.
Thank you, Bill. Today, I will review our current portfolio, discuss our second quarter results, provide an update on our balance sheet, and share our modified 2018 guidance. Additional details regarding our second quarter results can be found in the company's second quarter earnings release and supplemental information package. As of June 30th, we owned 47 operating properties comprising approximately 3.7 million sq ft of commercial real estate, with an additional 340,000 sq ft under development. The weighted average remaining lease term for our portfolio was 7.7 years. The average age of our portfolio was 12.7 years, and our portfolio occupancy remained at 100%. In addition, 99% of our annualized lease income was backed by the full faith and credit of the United States government. Pro forma for the recently completed acquisition of VA San Jose and for the future acquisition of the previously announced 14-property portfolio, Easterly will own 62 operating properties comprising approximately 5.3 million sq ft. The pro forma weighted average remaining lease term for our portfolio would be 6.8 years, and the average age of our portfolio would be 13.5 years. For the first quarter, net income per share on a fully diluted basis was $0.03. FFO per share on a fully diluted basis was $0.29. FFO as adjusted per share on a fully diluted basis was $0.25, and our cash available for distribution was $10.9 million. GAAP measures and reconciliations of these non-GAAP measures to GAAP measures have been provided in our supplemental information package. Turning to the balance sheet. At quarter end, the company had total indebtedness of $487.8 million, which was comprised of $100 million outstanding on our 2016 unsecured term loan facility, $175 million of senior unsecured notes, and $212.8 million of secured mortgage debt. Availability on our revolving line of credit stood at $450 million, and the company's $150 million 2018 unsecured term loan facility remained undrawn. As of June 30th, Easterly's net debt to total enterprise value was 19.9%, and its net debt to annualized quarterly EBITDA ratio was 3.9 times. As previously announced last week, our board of directors declared a dividend related to our first quarter of operations of $0.26 per share. This dividend will be paid on September 27th, 2018, to shareholders of record on September 13th, 2018. For the 12 months ending December 31st, 2018, the company is modifying its guidance of FFO per share on a fully diluted basis to a range of $1.17-$1.22. This modification is attributable to the anticipated timing of closing of our 14-property portfolio and the success in upsizing of our June equity offering. This guidance is based on the company completing the $515 million of acquisitions announced to date this year. The company currently expects to close approximately $175 million of acquisition volume in September and the remaining $255 million in December of this year. The company's guidance further assumes $50 million-$75 million of development-related investment during 2018. The company's 2018 FFO guidance is forward-looking and reflects management's view of current and future market conditions. As our business matures and we begin looking to 2019 and beyond, we are going to highlight FFO as adjusted in addition to FFO on a fully diluted basis, as we believe this metric will help highlight the economic strength and cash flow generation capability of the underlying portfolio. We are choosing to take the time to do this because with the renewal of significant leases in our portfolio in the coming years, like the six Bill just discussed, there are non-cash adjustments related to the amortization of lease-related assets and liabilities in our FFO per share on a fully diluted basis metric, which may confuse some investors regarding the cash-generating power of the FFO guidance which we have historically provided. Our objective is to deliver a growing cash dividend backed by the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, and we believe the company's current portfolio and in-process developments will allow us to deliver on this goal. Moving on to the company's capital markets activities, the second quarter was marked by two notable events. The first was the completion of an amended and upsized senior unsecured credit facility. In June, the company replaced its existing senior unsecured revolving credit facility with an amended and upsized credit facility consisting of a $450 million revolver and a $150 million five-year delayed draw senior unsecured term loan for a total credit facility size of $600 million. The revolver includes an accordion feature that may provide the company with additional capacity of up to $250 million for a total amended credit facility capacity of up to $850 million. The revolver will mature 4 years from the closing date in June 2022, with 2 6-month as-of-right extension options available to extend the maturity to June 2023. The term loan will mature 5 years from the closing date in June 2023. The term loan has a 365-day delayed draw period and is prepayable without penalty for the entire term of the loan. Borrowings under the revolver will bear interest at a rate of LIBOR plus a spread of 125 to 180 basis points, depending on the company's leverage ratio. The term loan will bear interest at a rate of LIBOR plus a spread of 120 to 175 basis points, depending on the company's leverage ratio. Given the company's current leverage ratio, the initial spread to LIBOR is set at 125 basis points and 120 basis points for the revolver and term loan, respectively. In addition to the execution of an expanded credit facility, the company completed an equity offering of 20.7 million shares in conjunction with the announcement of a pending 14-property portfolio acquisition. As Bill mentioned, in June, the company launched an overnight equity offering and successfully raised $398.5 million of gross proceeds through the issuance of 20.7 million shares of its common stock, consisting of 13.7 million shares offered directly by the company and 7 million shares offered on a forward basis at a price to the public of $19.25 per share. The company expects to physically settle the forward sales agreements and receive proceeds, subject to certain adjustments, from the sale of its shares of common stock upon one or more such physical settlements within approximately 6 months from the date of the prospectus supplement relating to the offering. We believe these two activities, the credit facility and the equity offering, put the company in a very strong competitive position going forward. We look towards the future with excitement as we continue to pursue opportunities which we believe will drive earnings and distributable cash flow into 2019 and 2020. With that, I will now turn the call back to the operator for questions.
Thank you. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you'd like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star key. Our first question comes from the line of Manny Korchman with Citigroup. Please proceed with your question.
Hey, it's Michael Billerman here with Manny. I don't know, Daryl or Peter, whether you want to address this, but you know, you go back to the beginning of 2016, you were basically running at 30 cents of FFO. You know, this quarter you put in 29 cents 2.5 years later, and that's despite the fact that it's because of the fact you've doubled your share base and more than doubled your asset base. And I keep on hearing you guys talk about accretion. I guess at what point are you actually going to see growth in your underlying earnings? And how do you start thinking about that level, especially given the fact that effectively now for 3 years you will have no growth?
Super question. Megan, why don't you start and I'll finish.
Yeah, sure. So as we focus ultimately, Michael, on distributable cash flow, I think it's important to have watched our ability to increase the dividend and continue to pay cash back to investors. Obviously, at the moment, we are in a position post-offering where the balance sheet is in great shape and we have capital waiting to be deployed. So as we look out to the remainder of 2018, 19, and particularly into 20, as our development comes on board, we're confident that the portfolio's ability to continue to generate greater levels of distributable cash flow will transpire.
Yeah, you know, and Daryl, I would say, of course, it's these REITs compared to other businesses without retained earnings, you don't get that compounding growth. But I think certainly since IPO, we've done a very nice job stepping that stepping the dividend up. We've meaningfully grown the portfolio, which leads again to when I was speaking about diversification and stability. We're super proud of the portfolio that we've built and its ability to deliver dividends. You know, and we've laid the groundwork with the development that as continues to grow, and for the opportunities of the new development opportunities that we see on the horizon, you know, those can make a meaningful contribution to cash available for distribution. You know, so as you look out in the model, again, we've had nice dividend increases over time, but I'd certainly see by the end of 2020, quarterly dividends of 30 cents or greater, which again, if you look over time, I think that's a nice return for shareholders, and that really doesn't include us having some nice positive surprises like the large portfolio that we were able to acquire most recently.
Right. I mean, look, I think most investors will think about REITs on a total return perspective, right? And so if you look at the last 2.5 years, your stock is relatively flat as your earnings have been flat, right? And you've grown the equity base, you've doubled your equity base. And so, you know, at some point, you can increase the payout ratio by increasing your dividend, but with earnings flat, you know, there's not much growth, which is being reflected a little bit in your stock price. So how
right.
should the market think about, you know, especially when you're committing such new capital, right? And, you know, you said you wanted a public option, you paid the highest price, right? So it's easy to accumulate assets. It's harder to make those investments accretively. And so
yeah.
I'm just trying to get a sense of, you know, your mindset when, you know, your FFO has basically been flat for 3 years.
Right. And so our mindset is, again, the cash that comes out of the REIT, you know, again, backed full faith and credit by the U.S. government. You know, we look today, you know, the yield is, you know, 5.25 or higher, essentially, on, you know, what are government revenues. So we also know, you know, that we look in the market and we look at other REITs, and, you know, who am I to tell you, you know, how to think about REITs. But I would say, you know, scale does matter, and scale equals diversification. So we have the highest credit tenant of any REIT that you cover, or any REIT that's out there. And that stability of cash flow should be the highest valued cash flow that's in the REIT world. Why has it not been, most highly valued? Well, scale is probably a pretty big, a big factor. You know, so our mindset, again, accounting anomalies aside, and, you know, Megan can spend time with you and Manny, you know, going through why FFO and FFO is adjusted, you know, as we do lease renewals, you know, those numbers, you know, FFO flattens out, FFO is adjusted, you know, grows, you know, and we're looking at substantial, we're not increasing our payout ratio of CAD, we're actually increasing the real CAD that's coming out of the portfolio. You know, so when we look at, you know, CAD growth for next year and into 2020, it's substantial. And so, you know, our mindset is to have a consistently growing dividend, full faith and credit of the U.S. government. Obviously, a REIT is not a government bond, but I don't know how many basis points are reasonable for our yield to be above the 7-year treasury. But we certainly see that over time, that gap should shrink. And as long as we keep delivering what is kind of single-digit to low double-digit growth in, you know, in dividend and hopefully stock price, you know, that should put us in the kind of the top 10% of return drivers for REIT investors.
Right, but you're at 25 cents this quarter, and then an adjusted FFO, you're at 27 cents at the beginning of 2016. So when you measured on FFO, adjusted FFO, FAD, there's been no growth. And I think that, you know, you can go through that protection of leases and things like that and government. You know, at the end of the day, you're a net lease REIT that your entire job is putting out capital and raising capital. You know, ultimately, you have to underlying seeing growth. And I'm just trying to understand, you know, at what point will estimates start going up rather than going down? Right? Is it the back half of 2019? Is it 2020? Because at this point, right, all you've seen is numbers go the other way.
Well, you know, again, I'm not going to get into what our guidance is next year for next year, but, we all have the models. I think, giving you the indication that we're going to have, you know, dividends that are, you know, 30 cents or higher per quarter, you know, in the, within 1 to 2 years is certainly valuable. And I would say, so there you have it. I mean, and remember, our leases are not one where our leases over time should keep up with inflation. But the value of our REIT, you know, I'd say, you know, say it in a cheeky way, you know, we buy the real estate and sell the credit. And that is, we, you know, the value, the stability of our cash flows and full faith and credit, you know, going out 5, 10, 15 years, we think is valuable. And it was why we brought this REIT to the public in 2015, because it was a unique offering relative to the others that were out there.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from line of Michael Lewis with SunTrust Robinson Humphrey. Please proceed with your question.
Thank you. My first question, probably for Megan. You ended 2Q with $150 million of cash. You've got the delayed portion of the equity offering. You don't have debt maturities for years. What do you think is your runway or investment capacity after taking down the rest of the portfolio acquisition to make additional investments before you think you have to come back to the equity market?
Yeah, I appreciate the question, Michael. It's an important point. And as I look at the capacity of the balance sheet, given where leverage is today and where we've stated for quarters now, our equilibrium comfort level is in that 6 to 7 times. Now, I view our ability to have $250 to $300 million of total asset capacity is the right number today, beyond the portfolio.
Perfect. And I guess a follow-up to that, I mean, how do you think about, you know, this quarter you took the upsized equity offering, you hit the ATM a little bit. How do you kind of balance, you know, the timing of, you know, taking equity when you could get it or when it's attractive versus, you know, coming to the market with a deal when you need it, and kind of managing that near-term earnings dilution?
Yeah, so as we approach the equity markets on the with the announcement of the portfolio, I think the balancing factor was not only ensuring that we're financing the short term, but making sure that we were had the ability to take equity, to given the strength of the offering, to provide that excess liquidity, but also ensure that we were able to maintain the dividend, as we spoke to Michael about before, and look to grow it over time into the next year or two.
Okay, gotcha. The $250 to $300 million, that's a lot of capacity to take, and I guess, you know, helps explain that dilution. I mean, you know, listening to your conversation with Michael, you know, that dividend growth is, I mean, I'll do the math in my head, I guess, 20% dividend growth over, you know, you said, I guess, 2 years, let's call it, on the long end. But, you know what, I'll come back to that offline. Let me ask just two more quick ones. Bill did a good job going through the leases coming up for expiration in the portfolio you acquired. You've got three coming up in 18, two in 19. Is there any reason to believe anybody would move out or downsize?
Good morning. No, I think we're very confident in our tenants, and I think we feel very good. I think we've executed where we said we would, certainly within the bullseye section. So we continue to work through. I will say that the government is a always an interesting partner to negotiate with, but in the end, we have the same goals, and I think we've proven we're able to keep them in our buildings.
And then just last one for me. The portfolio acquisition, is there anything in that pool of properties that maybe, you know, is fringe on the bullseye, or some, you know, maybe something that's multi-tenant that you could that might be a near-term disposition, or do you think that you'll hold all of these for the long term?
I'd say, I think, first of all, we've underwritten, as I mentioned, this portfolio for literally years. It was one of the ones that would have gotten us to scale to go public. So I think we're very familiar and very happy with the buildings in that portfolio. You are correct. There are several multi-tenanted buildings. However, I think they are some of the strongest buildings in the portfolio. And while, we've always bought BMWs, for example, Mercedes makes a good model as well. And so if you look at Buffalo, you look at Portland, and you look at Charleston, we think that these are enduring, and actually, frankly, Clarksburg as well. We think we've got really enduring missions in these properties. However, you know, I will tell you that overall, and we've tried to do this, we try to be 100% federal leased, and we try to be as close to the bullseye as possible going forward. So if we see opportunities or we think that we need to make a shift, we will certainly do it, and I think we will do it decisively. However, right now, we're very pleased with the portfolio.
And this is Daryl. As we've mentioned, maybe it's the last conference call, you know, there are a series of portfolios that are out there. And I'll, you know, strongest compliments to Bill. You know, since the IPO, we have continued to distill and focus and really kind of push our bets, you know, onto the bullseye. And there are many, I mean, as anyone who runs these REITs knows, and you as the analyst community particularly, there are plenty of properties you could kind of pick up along the way that are at a higher cap rate, or you could rationalize or part of your strategy. And we've been defined as much by the deals that we don't do as those that you have come to see. So as we move forward and look to other portfolios, there certainly will be very high quality buildings that are attractive, but may not be in our bullseye. And then I think as we concentrate to a greater and greater degree on bullseye properties and the dynamics that we best understand around those properties, that will be our focus, you know, over the next 5 to 10 years.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, if you'd like to join the question queue, please press star one at this time. Our next question comes from the line of Michael Carroll with RBC Capital Markets. Please proceed with your question.
Yeah, thanks, Bill. Can you talk a little bit about what you're seeing on the investment market, what type of deals you're currently tracking? And I noticed that your guidance doesn't really assume any more incremental investments. Is that because you're working to complete this large portfolio transaction, or do you think that there's other deals that you could potentially complete before year end?
Well, a couple things, and good morning. I think that, you know, it's not a mystery. We are in the eighth month of the year. So, and I just want to make the analyst community realize that, you know, we've got to make sure we put them all in the different quarters correctly. Portfolio is taking a fair amount of our time, but that doesn't mean that we're slowing down in any way on what we're seeing out there. Even if we were to buy something absolutely terrific at the end of the year, it's obviously not going to be working for us until next year. So I think that's an important point to put out there. But I think from a quality standpoint, we continue to see wonderful opportunities. Individually, we're seeing small portfolios. And as Daryl mentioned, we're also seeing large portfolio opportunities. I think that the increase in interest rates, as I said before, has actually given us more opportunities going forward as these sellers, and I remind you, there are really about 500 GSA properties and 50 VA properties. We know where every single one of them are, and these owners' cost of capital are different than ours. And as interest rates increase, I think so many of the conversations that in some cases we've been having for years will come to fruition as these owners realize that Easterly is probably a better home for these properties. We're probably going to be more successful renewing them as they come up for renewal. We have a wonderful team of folks that can do that and have great relationships, so we really provide a lot of extra value there. So from our standpoint, I think everything is steady as she goes with probably a positive bias on what we're seeing for opportunity.
Great. And then, Megan, can you talk a little bit about the leverage targets going forward? I know the recent offerings have probably reduced you below the long-term target range. Is 6-7 the stale goal, and are you comfortable near that 7 times, or would you prefer to stay near the low end of that expectation?
No, nothing has changed from our perspective there, Michael. 6-7 times is still our comfortable range. Development and timing of development, as we've discussed, particularly with the portion of the development budget that is lump sum, can push us towards the higher end, up towards that 7 times, but we're comfortable because, you know, that's for a temporary period of time.
And look, it's Daryl. I just lay on top of that. With these very successful lease renewals, I mean, when you look at these 10 and 15-year terms, mm-hmm. I entirely get that 6-7 times is the right range, and that's the expectation. But as we've said again and again and again, the quality of our cash flows is higher than other folks out there. In theory, they should be more leverageable, but we govern our leverage ratio, you know, so that we, you know, stay within the pack among REITs. But that said, our leverage, even if we were to get to that 7 times level, is an even more credit-worthy, supported 7 times, you know, than it ever has been in our history.
Okay, and then can you give more details on the recent renewal with the IRS? Is there any capital that you committed to that lease or any free rent associated with it?
With regard to Fresno, there is 1 month of free rent in that renewal, and we're working with the government to finalize their TI requirements, and we would expect capital in the $2 to $5 million range.
Okay, and then finally for me, the PTO lease that comes due soon, I think in the supplement it says 2019/2020. Is there two lease expirations with that asset?
Yeah, there are. There's two portions in the property. Actually, Fred owns the first floor, and then we have two different partners. So we, as a retail section in the bottom, I know you visited with us, and then there's two different sections within the building that are leased to PTO. That is ongoing. But we do expect that we will renew that property. That'll really come about fruition in January of 2020. I think will be the next lease for them.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of John Peterson with Jefferies. Please proceed with your question.
Great. So just one question. You guys talked earlier about, potential for dispositions and around a lot of non-core properties. But I was curious specifically about IRS Fresno. You know, you put a 15-year lease on that property. I don't know if you can remind us how old of a building that is, or if that, you know, now that it has a 15-year lease on it, if that's something that is primed to be sold and reinvest that capital somewhere else.
Yeah, good morning, John. It's a 2003 build, and it was built basically for the IRS in Fresno, which is one of the 10 super centers, as you know, in the United States, and it handles compliance for 9 states, including California. So incredibly important mission. And it's actually getting upgraded within the IRS to handle some other fraud stuff as well. That's the thing that is so important to point out. Not only do we get a 15-year lease with the federal government, I don't know how many people on this call will be here when I announce that it's renewed for another 15 years, 13 years from now, but I welcome you then. But the deal is, these buildings have incredible value with these long-term leases, and anything over 10 years seems to be reflected with a very high valuation right now. So, of course, we're going to take the opportunity over the 3 or 4 years to decide as to whether we think that IRS's mission is going to continue to be as important, how this facility fits into it. But that's the wonderful thing about getting these longer-term extensions. It gives us a lot of flexibility and a lot of value for our shareholders.
Yeah, okay. I guess a follow-up on that, you guys talked about the value or I guess the impact on your stock price of gaining scale. I guess at what scale do you kind of get to the point where you can move to capital recycling rather than needing to come to the market and issue more equity?
I mean, it is, as we look to total assets of, you know, somewhere between $2 and $3 billion, we will certainly be at a place where we think strategically we have the scale to provide the diversification and strong stability, you know, for this portfolio. You already hear it though in some of what we're saying, and you know, super smart question around the flexibility that's inherent in these 15-year leases. You've heard that that what we've learned, right, when we step back and what have we learned since 2010, is that the bullseye strategy for us works. The insights that we have into those buildings, the ability to harvest value. Again, very hard to get rent growth in the types of leases that we have with the U.S. government. However, with the bullseye properties, you can see we've been extremely successful. We look to our plain vanilla properties. So obviously, our strategy on the margin is to get a longer-term lease and give us the flexibility to the degree to which we want to distill what we're doing around the bullseye, you know, the area, the target that we set out and have always known best, we're positioning ourselves for that option. And Megan's done such a fantastic job financing these buildings that the real opportunity to remain flexible and recycle capital, just, you know, whenever there's an opportunity to, again, concentrate on the bullseye where we find the greatest value for shareholders will certainly be an opportunity for us.
Great. And then I apologize if you guys already said this, but speaking about Megan and financing, the kind of deferred equity that you guys have, can you remind us how we should be thinking about when you pull that down throughout the rest of the year?
Yeah, so it's $7 million. We have 6 months to settle that. I think you can expect us to settle that at the very end of this year, December timeframe.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Our next question is a follow-up from the line of Manny Korchman with Citigroup. Please proceed with your question.
Manny? Michael?
Sorry about that. Still learning the phones after 20 years. Dow, can you talk a little bit about dividend coverage? You're running about 26 cents today, you know, whatever metric you want to use on page 11. You know, you look at 29 cents of FFO, 25 cents of FFO as adjusted, and, you know, let's call it 22 cents of CAD, adding back the acquisition costs and the principal amortization. Right, so, you know, your payout ratio is 90% of FFO, over 100% of FFO is adjusted, and 120% of your cash available for distribution, again, adding back the acquisition costs and the principal amortization. How is that sustainable and not too high of a payout ratio?
Yeah, no, thanks for the question, because, you know, obviously, as we've been scaling, we've been in this period, you know, a bit of a period of transition, mm-hmm. and there's been some anomalies in timing on how acquisitions come through. But when you look at these renewals, this portfolio that we're purchasing mm-hmm. in September and in December, as we look forward, we, you know, our intent is to, you know, dividend out, obviously reserving for capital and what else we need to do in order to renew leases and keep our buildings in top shape, but to be dividending out 95 to 100% of that cash that's available for distribution. When I talk about 30 cents a quarter in 2020, you know, that's the throttle's on 95 to 100%, and that is so, and that's the way the math works. I would encourage the analysts to all, you know, look at that CAD and work their models backwards. Maybe we could do a better job communicating NOI. I don't know. It's crazy to me with the stability of our cash flows that we can miss a number. And I would say that, you know, I'd really encourage folks to, you know, tweak their model and let's talk about, you know, CAD between here and 2020 and work it backwards. Because as we renew these leases, and an anomaly of the accounting of when we went public, there are, you know, above and below market leases, which maybe is a little different. To Michael Bilerman's fantastic point, FFO is not going to be the metric, you know, that actually indicates to investors our growth. As you know, we're kind of private equity people, and we focus on cash on cash returns, and that's why we're just going to keep talking cash, 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 dividend, dividend, dividend. Get the money into our investors' hands, and I'd encourage everybody, you know, to look at, 30 cents of CAD or greater in fourth quarter of 2020, and we'll help people in work it backwards either on these calls or if we have non-material things to share, we would certainly share them in conversations with any investor who wishes to give us a ring.
But that 30 cents, you're looking at it inclusive of acquisition cost and amortization. So, you know, this quarter would have been 19 cents. I gave you a little bit of the benefit of the doubt that those are they're cash items, they're more
yep.
debt-oriented and capitalized typically to an acquisition. So when you're talking 95 to 100%, are you comparing 19 going to 30 or you're comparing 22 cents going to 30? And again, you're paying 26 cents today. So
our reported CAD, Michael.
Overdisclose, so, Megan.
Yeah,
we're already writing an 8K about this, so, you know, just, like, keep jamming it out.
Yeah, your point is taken upon sort of the nature of amortization, but when we think about that, that's going to be perpetual to the business, so we're talking about CAD post that.
So you want to grow from 19 cents a quarter to 30 cents by 2020. I mean, I think having the building blocks of getting there, it would be
helpful. Let's do an analyst day. Analyst Day.
I don't know you have that amount of growth in 2019 and 2020 from what you have in place today. It just seems like awful large amount of,
right.
of growth.
It's not coming from FFO growth. Let's just be super clear because of as these leases roll.
We can certainly walk through your model, but obviously we've got the equity in there for an acquisition that we do not have any cash flow from yet. We have not closed any of those buildings. So I think you're looking at a quarter a little too myopically.
Right. Remember, we just took on a ton of shares, and the way we sourced, we could put a ton of money to work, we think, accretively for investors. Obviously, I think we've been deliberate about how we put our hands on the throttle since we've been public. And we were very mindful, again, of looking out and understanding where our dividend capacity is. And through this offering, we're deliberate about the amount of capital that we were able to take, timing we could put to work, and making sure we can be on a very clear path around the dividend. So I think some of the numbers may seem strange this quarter, but we'll certainly see as we move through the end of the year and into next year how we get to this 30 cents or greater by the end of 2020.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about 60% growth, right? Which is was not weighed down too much by the equity, right? Your equity was late, and in the back half of the year, you're running about 30 cents based on your guidance, which should drop down to about the same 19, 20 cents on CAD. Right. So growing from that level to 30 by the end of 2020 just seems like a pretty strong growth rate. That would need some more details behind it.
Great. Yeah, we've got to give you those. So let's just make sure we have an analyst day or a teach-in or whatever else we need to do, or we can do a webinar or all those fancy things that that we can do to communicate, because we do have to get analyst models synced up with what's going on at the company. And I am entirely empathetic that a big portfolio and an equity raise can make the numbers tough to track. And there is nothing gargantuan when I talk about 30 cents fourth quarter of 2020. I mean, it is what we've got in place, plus doing our day jobs. So let's figure it out. Megan remains open. Her line is open, and we're happy to work through stuff and get the information out to investors.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is another follow-up from the line of Michael Carroll with RBC Capital Markets. Please proceed with your question.
Yeah, thanks. Megan or Bill, can you talk a little bit about the lease spreads you expect over the next 2 years? And then I know Loma Linda has a pretty big rent bump also. When does that come in, and how big is that rent bump again?
Sure. I think the renewal spreads are going to be consistent. What we've said is, depending whether they're plain vanilla or whether they're bullseye, gun-toting sorts of properties. So, again, sort of high teens for those bullseye properties, and plain vanilla is going to be very much in line with the market. So I think that's probably what we'll see there. Loma Linda's bump, Megan?
Yeah, that's in the first quarter of 2019.
And how much is that?
30%.
30% increase.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Crate, there are no further questions at this time. I'll turn the floor back to you for any final comments.
Great. Thanks, everyone, for joining the Easterly Government Properties second quarter 2018 conference call. We appreciate your continued support, and we strive to provide strong risk-adjusted returns to our shareholders through dividend growth, and we look forward to getting together now or on the next conference call. All the best.
Thank you. This concludes today's teleconference. You may disconnect your lines at this time. Thank you for your participation.